Today's program was made possible by the generous prayer and support of the faithful friends and partners of this ministry. Visit our new website at Sheila.media.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Sheila Zielinski Show for this December 22nd, 2018 edition. Before I introduce my guest, I would just like to put it out to people. We are approaching the end of the year when things come due, and I'm asking people to get behind this ministry. Please support me on Patreon. You can become a patron by going over there to www.sheila.media and do support this ministry. Like I said, a lot of things are annual renewals, and I'd be really grateful if you would consider a generous donation for this time of the year. You can also donate on PayPal. There's other ways to donate. You can simply go to www.sheila.media. And I'd really like to thank people for their support, not just their financial support, but also for your prayers in a really difficult time, as people are now, I think, aware that I lost my father just weeks ago. So it's been a challenging time, but I'd really like to thank everyone for their continued prayers. It really means a lot to me, and I thank you so much for that. I am working over the holidays, so be watching for great shows to be uploaded over this next 10 days. I have a great show that I'm working on right now, Pastor Monty Mulkey. You're not going to want to miss that show. So do make sure that you are subscribed to both my Podomatic podcast, and make sure you're subscribed to my YouTube channel. All those social media icons are there at Sheila.media. That's www.sheila.media. And lastly, make sure you are signed up for my free e-newsletter. I really want to talk to you about a 2019 project I have. I'm just going to tell you very quickly, this is my goal that I envision for 2019. And it's exciting. We are creating a network of powerful prayer groups in each region with leaders and teams. Well, I envision one in every single province and every single state in the United States and in Canada to start out with, and then we'll be branching out into places like Australia, New Zealand, Europe, etc. We're going to provide training for leaders in the coming year. So I want you to email our team if you're interested in becoming a part of something very powerful. Shoot us an email at info@sheila.media. That's info@sheila.media. And in the subject line, put the name of your state or your province. And we're going to try to connect you with other people in your state. Having a leader, a point man in each state and province is the whole idea to get these prayer groups going in 2019. That's a real priority that I have. And training will be provided. So I'll give you lots more updates on that. So let us know your interest and get us an email today so we can start compiling these lists. Again, the email is info@sheila.media. Well, I have a fantastic guest on today. I've been seeing his name all around social media, of course, because of his incredible articles, such as one of my favorite articles up over there at technocracy.news, Why Canada Must Get Out of the Paris Agreement. It is my good friend who wrote the foreword for Green Gospel, my book. It is such a pleasure to have him on. He's been a long time friend of mine. We go back, well, 10 years now. Dr. Tim Ball, welcome to the program, sir. You are getting a lot of attention, my friend.
Well, thank you kindly. And I'm getting attention because I'm talking about something very rare these days. It's called common sense. and of course, as somebody once said, common sense isn't very common. And I also pointed out, by the way, to the anger of my academic colleagues, that there's not a university in the world that offers even a half credit in common sense. And I added insult to injury by saying that if a university offered a course, they'd have to bring someone from outside to teach it. And of course, this is becoming increasingly obvious as these ivory towers have become authoritarian in and of themselves. It's really frightening the degree to which they're affecting the world. But that's part of why you're seeing me on Twitter a lot. And of course, it's because some of the things you and I have talked about over the years are starting to come to fruition.
Well, where I want to start off with, I mean, this is unbelievable. I read this over at the Daily Wire. There's a Clemson philosopher and professor, New York Times. This is an article. It's an op-ed. So this professor, Todd May, says maybe we should all kill ourselves or at least abort all future children to save the planet. Kind of reminds me of the good old hand-picked science czar John Holdren and his little degenerate minion friend that wrote about forced abortions, sterilants in the water. But this guy actually says, hey, humanity is the source of devastation of everything. The elimination of the human species would be a good thing. This kind of reminds me of the good old Pope, his climate encyclical back in 2015, where his science advisor, Schellenhuber, he proposes, hey, the Earth's carrying capacity should be at least 1 billion or less. He said that on record. We got to get rid of these plebs, Tim.
Well, Schellenhuber, it's interesting because he was the head of the Climate Institute at Potsdam.
Yep.
And of course, that's the former East Germany. Therefore, he's at heart a socialist. And it's amusing that the Pope used him as the major science advisor for his encyclical. And by the way, one of the things that this Pope has done that's really annoyed me is you can no longer say, is the Pope Catholic? Right? But anyway, Schellenhuber is a member of a group called Pantheists, and the pantheists believe that the world population should be less than 1 billion people. And think about that as him acting as an advisor to a Catholic Pope, who, of course, promote population growth and no birth control and so on. I mean, the contradictions of this are unbelievable, but that's what's going on. And, of course, the other thing is that the Pope really isn't a Catholic anymore. He's a Marxist. And we had proof of that when he went to Bolivia, and the president of Bolivia gave him a bronze statue, which was the hammer and sickle of the Soviet Union with Jesus Christ crucified on it.
Yeah.
And the Pope accepted that as a gift. So, you know, you're known by the company you keep. But the wider part of this, of course, is there has always been a very, very deep-seated anti-humanity streak in this whole environmental movement. You get the extremists stating it, like this professor that you quoted, that we've got to get rid of all the people on the planet. And just to read you a quote of a similar extreme, Ingrid Newkirk, who was the co-founder and president of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
PETA.
Everybody knows that group. Well, here's what she said. Mankind is a cancer. We're the biggest blight on the face of the earth. If you haven't given voluntary human extinction much thought before, the idea of a world with no people in it may seem strange. But if you give it a chance, I think you might agree that the extinction of Homo sapiens would mean survival for millions, if not billions, of Earth-dwelling species. Phasing out the human race will solve every problem on Earth, social and environmental. And of course, the stupidity of that is that the Earth only exists because humans know it exists. No other animal knows the Earth exists. And so if humans left, you wouldn't know if it would solve all the problems because there'd be nobody left to measure it. That's the stupidity of this thinking. But this goes back to something you and I have talked about so often. It augurs back to what happened with Darwin's theory of evolution. Now, I don't know if you know the name Alfred Russel Wallace. His name should be known by everybody, and here's why. Russel Wallace was working in Asia at the same time that Darwin was working in the Galapagos and then publishing or working on his theory of evolution. Russel Wallace wrote a 40-page essay to Darwin saying, you know, here's my theory of evolution. And of course, it was exactly the same one or almost identical to what Darwin came up with. But Russel Wallace raised an extremely important point. And the point was, he said, if you do not have a theory that explains why and how humans are so incredibly different from all other species, your theory is a failure. And of course, Darwin then published his first edition on the origin of the species and never mentioned humans at all. And Russel Wallace immediately took him to task for it and said, well, how can you do that? How can you write about species and not mention humans? And he hounded him about it. Now, meanwhile, Darwin's friends saw Darwin's theory of evolution as an opportunity to defeat religion. Now, Darwin was not aware that this is what they were going to do, but they took it and they said, look, you've got to get published. You've got to get your work out there. And of course, what it did was it took over the biology and the science, and it effectively defeated religion. The way that it affected the world and affects today is that if you get rid of God, then you're left with the question that Russell Wallace kept pushing. How do you explain that humans are so different than all the other animals? And what happened in the universities was you went from two faculties, the natural sciences and the humanities. You added a third faculty, the social sciences, which is now the biggest faculty on the campus. And the social sciences are what I've always defined as human navel-gazing. It's the academics trying to explain from a non-God point of view how humans are different from all the other animals. So it's all about anthropology, psychology, sociology. And I used to tease my sociologist friends and said, you know, you guys are trying to prove scientifically what my grandmother already knew. You're not adding anything to understanding about humanity. So all of this is all tied together. And it goes in, as I said, with this strong anti-humanity streak, which Ingrid Newkirk expresses.
Yeah, it's very, very anti-human. And of course, you get into guys like these other neo-Malthusian snake oil salesmen, like, again, John Holdren, Paul Ehrlich, proposing sterilants in the water. And the stunning part is people accept this hook, line, and sinker. Why? Because it's done under the seemingly benevolent guise of, we're saving the planet. We have to act now.
Yeah, but that's what the left do. They do it incredibly well, is they hide it under some, either a phrase, a catchphrase, or behind something that sounds reasonable that does need to be addressed. So, for example, Principle 15 here from Agenda 21, this is how they do it. Oh, and I'll give you, while I'm looking for that, I'll give you another example. Obama was talking about net neutrality. Well, what the heck does that mean? What he was talking about was his fear that the internet was giving people information and power that allowed them to bypass the mainstream media and challenged the politicians who had control of the information. In fact, what net neutrality was presented under the guise that, oh, the internet providers are ripping you off. They're charging you too much for their services, and you're not powerful enough to fight them, so you need government to take over the internet. Again, that's that example where you hide the whole thing under the guise of doing something to save people because they're not capable of saving themselves. And that's exactly what these leftists do. Well, here's Principle 15. Yeah, Principle 15. When Maurice Strong set up Agenda 21, which was all about saying, we've got to save the planet, and there's the only way we can do that is with a world government. So we need to get rid of all the other governments, all the national governments, and we need a world government funded by carbon tax. And it's typical of the kind of sleight of hand that these people use. It says, in order to protect the environment, the precautionary approach shall be widely applied by states according to their capabilities. Where there are threats of serious or irreversible damage, lack of full scientific certainty shall not be used as a reason for postponing cost-effective measures to prevent environmental degradation. So there it is. You don't need science, but think about what they're saying. In order to protect the environment, you set up, oh, well, we're saving the planet. Then you say the precautionary approach. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, we should act anyway, regardless of all the evidence. That's the precautionary approach. Shouldn't we act anyway? And then they say it shall be widely applied by states according to their capabilities. That's the socialist part of it. In other words, if you're rich, you'll pay. If you're poor, we'll give you the rich people's money. Transfer of wealth. Built right into that. And then it goes on to say, where there are threats of serious or irreversible damage. Well, who decides that? They do. Mm-hmm. They decide what the threat is. They set up the straw man, and then they tell you how to burn the straw man. And then they go on to say, lack of full scientific certainty. Well, who decides what that is? They do. They can say, well, it's 10% scientific idea, so that's enough. That's all you need. And then they go on to say, for postponing cost-effective measures. Well, what's a cost-effective measure? So in other words, they set up the straw man. They then put all of the limits on it that they decide decide and they control. And that's a classic example of what the left do. And you look at anything that they do, whether it's Agenda 21, whether it's with controlling the internet, whether it's the global environment crisis, or whether it's what you quoted, the quote from John Holdren in the book with Paul Ehrlich, Eco-Science. You can see this everywhere you look. This is what the way that they play the game. They're still getting big funding. They're still pushing their message. Ehrlich, who he wrote with, who was so completely wrong on everything, all of his predictions about population. Here's one of the quotes in their book, Eco-Science, the one you quoted from, about them putting birth control in the water and the use of water for mass medication. That idea has been around for quite some time. But here's what they said. Compulsory abortions would be legal. Okay? And here's what they said in the book. Indeed, it has been concluded that compulsory population control laws, even including laws requiring compulsory abortion, could be sustained under the existing constitution of the U.S. if the population crisis became sufficiently severe to endanger the society. Indeed, it has been concluded. Well, who concluded it? They did. Okay? Said, indeed, it has been concluded that compulsory population control laws. They concluded that, even including laws requiring compulsory abortion. Again, that's what they're saying. And they say it could be sustained under the existing constitution. Well, how could it be sustained? They tell you the answer. If the population crisis became sufficiently severe to endanger the society. Well, who decides that? They do. So it's exactly the same as the principle 15. So you set up this straw man saying, oh, it has been concluded. Well, who concluded it? Oh, well, we did. Oh, so, yeah, we're not supposed to know that. This is the way the game is played. It's frightening. It's truly frightening. And of course, unless you realize what they're doing, it appears like, this sounds reasonable. Hey, the world's being swamped. The world's being overrun. The sky is going to fall. And by the way, just to put this into a much shorter context, one of the reasons this is being now so effective is because we have lost true politicians. A politician, originally, the idea of it was that you became a politician after you had benefited from the society and you took your knowledge and expertise and went and ran for political office to give back to the society. One of the first people to do that in the 20th century was the wrestler, Jesse Ventura from Minnesota. Ventura said, hey, I benefited enormously from America and the Constitution, so I'm going to run for the governorship of the state of Minnesota, and I'm not going to run as a Democrat or a Republican. I'm going to run to do what the people want me to do.
As an independent,
As an independent. And he went in and he cut the budget, he balanced the budget, and he also said, I'm only going to stay one term. And he did exactly that, and he got elected on that basis. The next person to do that was, of course, Trump. What has happened in the interim is all the politicians, I don't care whether they're conservative, socialist, whatever, they are all professional politicians. Their sole goal is to get elected and then get reelected. And then as long as they can get two terms in, they get their big fat pension and they're off down the road. They could care less about the people. They do what is only expedient for them and their careers. And anything that might put them in jeopardy, they avoid like the plague. And they find excuses for not dealing with it. And you see that going on in Washington right now, where they're doing everything to prevent Trump achieving his goals, because Trump's goals are to reduce the power of Washington and give the power back to the people. And that's the last thing they want to happen.
Well, that's right, because Trump is on to their little shenanigans, their schemes. And I wonder if people actually realized him that, think about the Earth Charter preamble. I got to read this to people because this is so frightening. Maurice Strong, the United Nations 1992 Earth Summit. We are one human family in one Earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society. Towards this end, it is imperative that we, the peoples of the Earth, declare our responsibility to one another and to the greater good of Mother Earth. Humanity must undergo a bold global change of mind and heart, and the United Nations visualizes themselves as the lead change agent for this global undertaking. So, folks, what exactly does this Earth Charter contain? This is Canada's commitment to Earth worship, and it clearly lays out a constitution for a new green society. It states, we need to form a global partnership to care for the earth and one another, or risk the destruction of ourselves and the diversity of life. To fulfill this promise, we must adopt the Earth Charter. And to fulfill this promise, we must commit ourselves to adopt and promote the values and objectives of the Charter. It requires a new sense of global interdependence. There's a buzzword. We must find ways to harmonize diversity with unity. In order to build a sustainable global community, the nations of the world must renew their commitment to what? The United Nations. And what are the types of things they're going to do under this Earth Charter? Oh, well, here's one thing. Combat global warming. What is one of the answers to do that? Oh, dimming the sun. Go check out my green news. I've got an article there, a CNN article, December 20th. Scientists are proposing an ingenious but as yet unproven way to tackle climate change, spraying sun-dimming chemicals into the Earth's atmosphere. Oh, gee, what could go wrong, Tim?
Well, this comes under the general category of geoengineering. And I talked earlier, just a few minutes ago, about if you get rid of God, and then if you decide that all the problems on the planet are ones that humans have created, then you have to correct or feel that you can play God to correct those problems. And unless you know what you're doing, it's almost inevitable that you're going to make things worse. Now, just to give you an example of that, in the period from 1940 to 1980, global temperatures were going down. And global cooling was the consensus. So what people came up with was ideas to offset the cooling. Some of these included, for example, building a dam across the Bering Straits to stop the cold water coming out of the Arctic, which would then warm up the middle latitudes where most people lived. Another example was to put huge reflectors up in space to direct sunlight into northern cities to keep them warm during colder winters. And another example was to add CO2 to the atmosphere to warm the Earth up to offset the cooling that was going on. Well, now we see that warming is the consensus, so the geoengineering strategies are to offset the warming. In fact, what's actually happening is the Earth is cooling down. And one of the ways that you see this, and I've watched this for 40 years across the Canadian prairies, there are cycles of wet and dry. And they're about 22 years in length, with more extreme droughts about every 45 years. But what happens is you go into a dry period, and everybody's saying, oh, we need water, we're moisture deficit, I've got no water for my cattle, I've got no water for my community, and we want the government to build dams. So the government finally start building dams, and then as they're building the dams, you go into a wet cycle. And they're saying, oh, we're getting flooded. We got to get rid of the dams. We got to build drainage. So you're in a constant state of crisis management. And that's what we're doing. We're chasing cycles without understanding what the long-term natural variability of things are and then accommodating to that. And so this is exactly what we're doing with the geoengineering and what this idiot at the university is proposing. The only good thing about universities is it keeps a lot of these people mostly out of harm's way. But other than that, they don't add much. But this is what's going on here. And all we need to do, and by the way, the cycle that we're really in isn't a climate cycle at all. It's a political cycle. The two-term, six-year cycle of a politician. So they want to make sure that things don't happen in their term of office. Years ago, I used to keep a list of acronyms, you know, like not in my backyard, NIMBY was one of them. Another one that I liked was NAME, N-A-M-E, which stood for not at my expense,
yeah.
Right? In other words, people want things done, but not. But my favorite one came from the woman who was in charge of industrial waste in Ontario. And she said, well, I've got one for you. And I said, what's that? She said, ANIMTOO, ANIMTOO. And I said, well, what does that stand for? She said, absolutely not in my term of office. Okay. And so the cycle is a six-year cycle. So the climate, you need to be looking at 100, 500, 1,000 years to start to understand what the natural cycles of climate are and then fit to accommodate that. And until we start doing that, we're just going to be in crisis management from year to year based upon that professional politician cycle. cycle. And I don't see any way out of it for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, well, speaking of crises management, California's own Jerry Brown wasn't kidding when he suggested 2 years ago that California might launch its own satellite in defiance of climate change policies. He wants to develop a satellite that can track climate pollutants with greater precision and support more targeted efforts to fight climate change worldwide. They're always off at these global climate action summits. Anyway, he was at one and he said, yeah, he said, we want to launch our own satellite to figure out where the pollution is and how we're going to end it with great precision. This is the same guy who calls climate deniers responsible for the California wildfires. He might as well just say, you, Sheila Zielinski and Tim Ball, you evil climate deniers are responsible for these fires. It just never ends with these Marxist clowns. This is really straight out of the Marx playbook, isn't it? Karl Marx himself, Tim, would have salivated at the idea of using phony junk pseudoscience to advance a political agenda. Wow.
Yep, absolutely. And of course, that went on during Stalin's regime. I've forgotten the name of the biologist, but there was an exact example of that where a totally false scientific idea was put forward and promoted by Stalin. So yeah, what they need is something to control the people, but it's always got to be something that is impending doom. Now, there's a couple of things about this. First of all, I'm not going to say that there aren't problems. There are always problems. But overstating those problems is in and of itself a problem. The second thing is that problems are only problems as long as you're not aware of them. Once you're aware and define the problem, you're halfway there to solving the problem. Yeah. But people never think about it in those terms. The other thing is, there have always been the Pollyannas, the people that believe that there's no problem in the world, and the other of Cassandras, that everything's a problem. And of course, that's summed up, ironically, in the Chicken Little, the sky is falling. That's why the global warming thing was so effective, because it was the original Chicken Little, sky is falling idea. But if you look at history, there's been thousands of doomsayers in the history of the world. Not one of them has been right, because if one of them had been right, we wouldn't be here today. And it's as simple as that. Just to get back, by the way, for a second, to give you an idea about this anti-humanity, to get rid of all the people. This is from a research biologist for the National Park Service in the United States, David Graeber. He said, human happiness and certainly human fecundity, that is our ability to reproduce, are not as important as a wild and healthy planet. I know social scientists who remind me that people are part of nature, but it isn't true. Somewhere along the line, at about 1 billion years ago, we quit the contract and became a cancer. We have become a plague upon ourselves and upon the earth. Well, think of a biologist making that statement. It's incredible. Wow. Social scientists remind we're part of nature. That's back to my point about Darwin. See, here's the contradiction in what these environmentalists are saying. On the one hand, they admit that, oh, Darwin's right, survival of the fittest. But on the other hand, everything that they support and propose says that Darwin's wrong. We're not natural. We're not like the animals. So which is it? And this is why I mentioned Alfred Russel Wallace earlier. And by the way, Russel Wallace, he didn't use the term a greater being or an intelligent being. That's the term we use today as a possible explanation. That's an interim position between believing in God and not believing in God at all. So this is all part of this same debate. And notice, by the way, the errors in what Graeber said. He says somewhere along the line at about 1 billion years ago, we quit the contract. Well, what contract? Who did we make a contract with?
I think that's the words of L. Ron Hubbard of clearing the planet or something with Scientology. This is so new age. It's such a mishmash of, you know, what this is it's very antithetical to Christianity. Karl Marx was a self-professed Satanist, and yet you have these Marxist socialist minions like Pope Francis running around telling everybody that the Catholic Church has to lead the charge in fighting climate change, really? Oh, yeah. He definitely knows that humans are causing global warming. When did the Pope become a climatologist?
Well, but he didn't become a climatologist, but he found that it fit what was going on with the global warming threat and claim was that it fit very well with his socialist ideology. See, the one of the things that, and I had a debate with a Catholic about this the other day, and before we started, and they said, look, before you say anything, I want you to know I'm a Catholic. And I said, well, apart from the fact that you've got my sympathy, right, I said, you must separate Catholicism from Christianity.
Yeah.
And this is a very important idea with all of this, whether it's in religion or elsewhere. Everything starts with an idea. And that's one of the great things that God gave us was the free will, the ability to think independently. There's no other creature on earth that can do that. And we've been given free will. That's the thing that distinguishes us from all the other animals. Free will is enshrined in the American Constitution. It's the only country in the world where it's enshrined and posed and pushed. It's also enshrined in Christianity. The difficulty is that those two things, free will, are the things that anybody, that whether they're socialist, liberal, progressive, Marxist, socialist, that's the one thing they cannot stand. They cannot allow free will. They cannot allow you to think for yourself. And so, therefore, America and Christianity become the total focus of their attack.
Yeah, because Donald Trump represents everything that Karl Marx hated.
Yep, absolutely. Well, it's the idea of collectivism, globalization. That's what's the battle that's going on now. Very quickly, if I say the Huns, people know who the group are, but they couldn't tell you where they lived or where they existed. You know them by their leader, Attila. But when you say Elizabeth the First, you say, oh, Elizabeth of England. The people then are identified by the region they live in, not by their leader. That was a huge change in human history that occurred in Europe around the 14th century. Okay, and of course, out of that came America and the identification of a group of people and nationalism. And so you went from identifying a people by being a nation and then being identified by the state. So around the First World War and after the First World War, the world divided up into nation states, that is, regions that were occupied by people of similar language and culture and so on. The nation state became the pattern of the world. But after the Second World War, because of people like Eleanor Roosevelt, who was an absolute dyed-in-the-wool socialist with bizarre sexual proclivities as well, but she set up the United Nations to subjugate the nation state to the larger government, the global government.
Right.
And that's the battle that's been going on ever since the Second World War. You see it with the growth of Europe, the battle with what's going on in Europe, the collectivization. Well, the people have had enough of that. The people don't want to be ruled by some unelected, faceless bureaucrat in some other country. And so they're fighting back in various ways. And that's the struggle that's going on now. It's going on both globally, but within regions such as Europe, but also within countries like Canada or the United States. So the people of America are being tired of being dictated to by Washington. This is, again, the genius of the Founding Fathers. They knew that all of the power, virtually all of the power, should reside with the states. And the only thing that the federal government should do is defense, to defend the country. And that's what Trump is saying. He said, that's my only duty, is to defend the borders. And without borders, you do not have a country. So that's the battle that's going on. Well, if you get rid of the borders, you don't have a country. What's the alternative? Globalization. That's exactly what Schumer and Pelosi want. They want to get rid of the nation state, and they want a world government.
Bingo.
And this is the big battle that's going on at the border right now.
Yeah, it is a battle. And I'll tell you what, people are waking up, though. I mean, look at this GoFundMe account started by this veteran. It's already got something ridiculous, like what, over $10 million has been raised in just a few days. You can tell that the tides are turning. People are waking up. You look at this Yellow Vest movement. You look at all these convoys in Alberta, and go Alberta. Trudeau has to go. What a demon that guy is. But that's really representative of what is going on all over the earth. People are waking up, and the tables have turned.
They are turning, sort of towards the end of the program here, we need to introduce a ray of hope, because people are also sick and tired of the doom and gloom and no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And of course, the light at the end of the tunnel is lit by fossil fuels. And that's what we've got to realize. But yeah, the only thing that professional politicians of any stripe do with efficiency is find new ways to tax people, and then also find new ways to waste the money. That is also what people are tired of. I mean, when you look at, for example, what Trump was able to achieve, I mean, he got this farm bill that got through and was passed yesterday or the day before. That initially, while he was negotiating that, it cost the farmers some money. They lost markets to soya and everything in China. But Trump said to them, look, you're going to suffer a little bit, but in the meantime, I'm negotiating a better deal for you. Well, now the farmer said, fine, we'll suffer a little loss in income, because in the long run, we believe in what you're doing for us. And therefore, Trump broke that six-year cycle that I talked about. And of course, the other thing that Trump did for the farmers was that they introduced what was called an inheritance tax. And this was based upon Obama's idea of, oh, well, you didn't start that. You didn't build that. The government did all of that for you. Therefore, when you die, we're going to take all that back in what became known as a death tax. And Trump got rid of that. He said, no, if you built a farm or a small business, you should have the right to pass that on to your children. These are the sorts of things that Trump is doing that recognizes what the ordinary people are concerned about and what is important to them, and giving back to them control over their own lives. And this is the struggle that's going on, the right and freedom of the individual against the right and power of the state. Never has it been more crucial than it is now. The fact that these riots are going on around the world, yes, the one in Europe started against Macron and his carbon tax, but it very quickly got enjoined by other people, both on the left and the right, ironically, because they didn't like what Macron was doing, that he was trying to take control of the government and control France that way. Now, France has always been ungovernable.
Yeah.
And the only reason that France can survive and be an apparently successful country is because it's one of the few nations in the world that can feed itself. It has always been able to produce surplus food. And that's the key to everything in history and society. If you can feed yourself, you have control over your own life. And one of the things that we gave up when we moved from the countryside into the cities is we abandoned the ability to feed ourselves. We had to depend upon the food being brought to us and provided for us. And that's why whenever that's the only thing in history that triggers a revolt of the people is a failure of the food supply. The most recent example we had was in Egypt. Obama said it was the Egyptian people voting for democracy, when Egyptians haven't got democracy even at the family level, let alone any other level. They were rioting because the price of the basic foodstuffs went beyond what they could afford to pay. In France, the French Revolution occurred because in 1787 and 1788, the price of bread went to the point where in 1788, the peasants were paying 92 cents on the dollar for a loaf of bread. 92% of all they made went to a loaf of bread. In 1789, they stormed the Bastille and the French Revolution's on. It didn't last very long. The aristocrats, the power elite, are still in control in France. And of course, that's what Macron represents and why they're protesting against him. But all of these riots around the world are, yes. And what Trump has triggered is a true original people's revolution. The aristocrats, there was never a popular revolution in England. And the reason was because the aristocrats were always smart enough just to appear to give power to the people. They said, oh, you want a parliament? Fine, you got a parliament. Oh, but we got the House of Lords. Canadians don't realize that we didn't get to vote for the prime minister. We had no say in who the prime minister is, but we've got a Senate that's got 104 people, all appointed by the prime minister or various prime ministers, who are not elected and yet can override anything the House of Parliament, the people's elected people, can bring forward. So we have no control over our government whatsoever, but people live in the belief that they have control. People believe they own the land on which they bought. Yes, you've got a title to a plot of land, but it's on Crown land, and the government can come in anytime they wish for whatever reason they dream up and take your property away, and there's nothing you can do about it. In America, it's exactly the opposite. So this is the struggle that's going on right now, and the people are becoming aware of this. For example, with the climate issue now, the polls are showing that the public are simply not believing that climate change is a concern anymore. They don't know why it's not a concern. They just know that there's something wrong with what's being said.
Yep.
And therefore, once they realize, as they're beginning to realize, then they will act. The people respond very slowly because they're afraid of change. But once that steamroller of the people starts to move, it'll flatten everything in its way. And that's the way we're heading.
And that's what you've got to love about Donald Trump. He is just a new world order wrecking ball. And they just, oh, they hate him.
Yep, totally. And because, see, here's the thing. He said, I'm not a politician. The one great advantage that Trump has is those idiots, the media and the other politicians think that he, and they still try to deal with him as if he is a politician. And I'll give you one example of this. When he was interviewed by a woman in New York, she had her gotcha questions, which were questions that would have, she set him up with a false premise. Leslie Stahl, exactly. She said, well, you know, in Greenland, the ice is melting and glaciers are falling into the ocean because of global warming. That's not true at all. But she set up the false premise and then tried to say, well, you know, shouldn't we be doing something about this false premise? And this is why Trump is constantly winning. She tried to deal with him as if he was a politician and saying, well, look, here's this serious problem. What are you doing about it? And Trump said, well, I have a different view on it.
Oh, yeah. She was trying to set him up big time, Leslie Stahl, but she got steamrolled by Trump. Let's take a listen to this.
I don't want to give trillions and trillions of dollars. I don't want to lose millions and millions of jobs. I don't want to be put at a disadvantage.
I wish you could go to Greenland. Watch these huge chunks of ice just falling into the ocean, raising the sea levels.
And you don't know whether or not that would have happened with or without man. You don't know.
Well, your scientists at NOAA and NASA.
No, we have scientists that disagree with that.
You know, I was thinking, what if he said, no, I've seen the hurricane situations. I've changed my mind. There really is climate change. And I thought, wow, what an impact. What an impact that would make.
I'm not denying climate change, but it could very well go back. You know, we're talking about over millions of years. They say that we had hurricanes that were far worse than what we just had with Michael.
Who says that? They say. You mean people say that. Yeah, but what about the scientists who say it's worse than ever?
You'd have to show me the scientists because they have a very big political agenda, Leslie.
I can't bring them in.
Scientists also have a political agenda.
Leslie Stahl had her script here. And then, of course, she goes on to change the subject. But these people just simply parrot their talking points. Here, Leslie, here's your talking points. Stick to the script.
And I spoke about this at a conference in Phoenix a year ago, November, and it was a Freedom for All conference, that the power elite have always controlled the information and what the message the people are given. And today, because of the internet, the average citizen knows more than even most nations knew even 20 years ago. And that, of course, is the ultimate control. I read this to you again. I've read it before, but this is the poem from 1780. How shall I speak of thee, or thy power address, the god of our idolatry, the press? By thee, religion, liberty, and laws exert their influence and advance their cause. By thee, worse plagues than Pharaoh's land befell, diffused, make earth the vestibule of hell. Thou fountain at which drink the good and wise, thou ever-bubbling spring of endless lies. Like Eden's dead probationary tree, knowledge of good and evil is from thee. This is the most frightening thing that could happen to the power elite, and they know it, and they've known it since the American Revolution began. And that's why Trump's tweeting is so absolutely critical. And Trump understood this. He said that who were trying to stop him tweeting more than anybody? The media. Because by tweeting, he went directly to the people and said, no, here's what they're not telling you. Make up your own mind. And the media and the politicians that support that media and benefit from that media see that, the internet and Trump's tweets, as the absolute center of the attack. And by the way, I would remind you that blog sites and the internet and Trump's tweets are the same as the pamphlets that were produced during the American Revolution that were distributed by people like Paul Revere that bypassed the government and the newspapers of the day, and that's where the people got their information. The same thing is happening now on a worldwide basis. And you look at the countries in the world that limit or control the internet, and that's a clue as to what's happening with the control of information. But hopefully people will understand that the absolute battle is in making sure that no government can limit or control the internet.
Yes, well said. Well said. Well, we're coming close to the end of this show here, Tim. Please do give out your information, your website, where they can find your handiwork and get your book. Give out your website, please.
It's drtimball.com. That's all lowercase, drtimball.com. And I post articles pretty regularly on there. There's thousands of articles on there, all written about 1,000 words long and deliberately written in ways that the public can understand, because one of the things these people hide behind is jargon, the use of terminology, and that gives you power if you can create your own language. And my book is posted on there, and it's available through Amazon.com. The short version, which everybody will be able to read quickly, it's 106 pages. It's called Human Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History. And it's written in something that's rare these days, an investigative journalism format, because it answers the question, why, what, where, when, and how.
Okay, Tim, here's a little joke in the last section of the program. So you got to picture a little girl, and she's sitting on Santa's knee, and he says to her, what would you like for Christmas, little girl? And she says, a unicorn. Santa says, come on, be realistic. Okay, she says, a government that doesn't violate the Constitution and plunder my wealth. Santa says, what color unicorn would you like? And speaking of funny jokes, Tim, you got to tell your Hyde Park thing in the end of the program for the folks.
What I learned as a teenager, and I really, it was funny then, but I didn't realize the full implication, but the guy in England, and this tells you something about America and how the freedom, there's only one place in England where you can attack the government openly, and that's Hyde Park Corner. And this guy set up his soapbox, and he's saying, come the revolution, we're going to do this, and come the revolution, we're going to do that. And he gets down the list, and at the end he says, come the revolution, we'll all wear shirts and ties. And a voice at the back shouts out, but I don't want to wear a shirt and a tie. And the guy on the soapbox says, come the revolution, you'll do what you're bloody well told.
Wow, that's Trudeau's mantra. You'll do what right, you're bloody well
yeah.
told.
I'll promise you everything, and then in the final analysis, if you challenge me, I'll make you do it. Anyway, Sheila, look, thanks again for the opportunity. And prayers for you and your family, and all the best for Christmas. And I'm so grateful to have you, Marty, and I so grateful to have you as a friend. We really are.
Oh, likewise, my friend. Likewise. I'm really, really glad you took the time out of your busy holiday schedule to come on. And I thank you for what you do. You're a very courageous man who's really been trying to expose this new world order for decades. Thank you for what you do, Tim.
And I couldn't do it without the support of you and all the other radio and blog sites around the world. And I'm so grateful for that. I don't want people to necessarily to believe. Go and read it for yourself. We've presented the other side. Now you've got both sides of the argument. Now you can exercise your free will and make up your own mind.
Well said, well said. Folks, don't take our word for it. Go do the research for yourself. And one of the ways you can really do some good research is get Dr. Tim's book. The information is linked there in the bio below. And again, that's drtimball.com. drtimball.com. That's drtimball.com. Reach out to Tim and let him know you heard him on the program. What a fantastic program. And we have more fantastic programs coming all this week. Be sure to be following my podcast and subscribe to my YouTube. I hope everyone has a very blessed holiday season. Be blessed. Happy holidays, everyone. Love you lots. We'll see you real soon. Good night, and God bless you.